Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, August 29th, 2018. Will Riek Machar end up signing the latest peace deal?
And anything that delays the signing of the peace agreement is unwelcome by the citizens of South Sudan.
And the Kiir administration reacts to the arrests of some 200 South Sudanese in Kenya.
Kenyan's police have been moving from door to door, cracking down our citizens, arresting some of them, especially minors.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese officials say today that South Sudanese rebel chief Riek Machar has agreed to sign a final peace deal with Juba to end the five-year civil war one day after refusing to do so. Machar's SPLM-IO and mediators for President Salva Kiir have held several weeks of talks in Khartoum to try to come up with a comprehensive peace agreement to end the conflict, which has killed tens of thousands of people and left millions of others displaced from their homes. The warring parties have signed several agreements in the past, including a permanent ceasefire and power-sharing deal in June, which allows Machar to return to the capital as first vice president. Yesterday, Machar refused to sign the deal after delegates for the Kiir administration did sign it. Today, Sudanese Foreign Minister Al-Dirduri told reporters Machar will sign the deal. He is expected to do so tomorrow in Khartoum. Machar and the South Sudan Opposition Alliance had said earlier that they had refused to sign the draft because it had failed to spell out their reservations, such as the number of states and their boundaries. It remains unclear if the Opposition Alliance will sign the deal tomorrow as well. Sources close to the mediator say Sudan President Omar al-Bashir promised Machar last night that substantial issues raised by the opposition will be discussed and considered by the IGAD heads of state. Opposition leaders are expected to meet with IGAD Special Envoy Ambassador Ismail Wais tonight. Civil society and faith-based groups are also expected to meet with opposition leaders tonight to convince them to sign the agreement in the hopes that peace will finally return to the country. Some Juba-based analysts say the SPLM in opposition and the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, both of whom refused to sign the latest deal, are likely to reconsider their decision and sign it because, according to them, the dispute over the number of states and their boundaries is not a major issue. Demo Silva Aurelia reports for VOA from Juba.
Abraham Awaleke, senior policy analyst at the Juba-based Sud Institute, says the decision by the SPLM-IO not to sign the latest peace deal because the number of states and their boundaries has yet to be agreed upon has left many South Sudanese wondering whether their leaders will restore peace to the country soon.
There was a momentum toward peace, and anything that delays the signing of the peace agreement is unwelcome by the citizens of South Sudan. So that reaction of many people, both in South Sudan and internationally, was that, if they didn't initial, that means that the whole process will be derailed. But I think there is a reason to believe that that is not going to be the case. They will sign the agreement eventually. I think for the SPLM-IO, there are two issues. The issue of the states was resolved with the other issues of governance, and they signed that document. But there has been reaction from their supporters that maybe they have given too much away. And so maybe they wanted to use this opportunity to try to retract.
Marial Awo, a professor of economics at the University of Juba, says the dispute over the number of states and their boundaries is not the cause of the conflict and should not derail the peace process.
When you sign an agreement, you sign an agreement to address the causes of the war. 10 states was not one of the causes of the war. It was not. Why do we stick to the issue of the states? Let us wait. And for me, the status quo should be left as it is today.
Awo says after the signing, the parties can hold a national convention and agree on the number of states. Awalik says Riek Machar and other opposition leaders might have realized their powers have been reduced under the deal.
Riek Machar's powers have been greatly reduced from what they were in 2015. In 2015, he was almost on the same level as the president. But in this draft proposal of the agreement, some of its powers have been reduced. although he's still going to be more senior than the other vice presidents, he doesn't have too many veto powers as he had in the previous agreement.
Under the latest revitalized peace deal, an independent boundary commission will be established to assess and determine within 90 days the number of states and their boundaries. If the commission fails to do so, it will automatically be converted into a referendum. Any further grievances on the number of states and their boundaries could be referred to a court of arbitration. Awalich says the SPLM-IO might be fearful that government could manipulate the commission to their advantage and keep the 32 states in place, which would mean less power for Machar and other opposition leaders. He says the political landscape has changed significantly since the warring party signed a peace deal in 2015. He says that is partly why rebel leader Machar is unlikely to force the government to change its position on the issue of the number of states and their boundaries.
In 2015, Riek Machar came to Juba as quite a significant and strong opposition leader, both in military terms and in terms of political support. Since then, his party has split and broken up, and his military also has receded significantly in terms of its power on the ground, and so he cannot impose his will on the other parties. And the opposition's in general, they are multiplied in number, but they have not created significant pressure internally to force the government to accept all their demands.
Awalich says since Machar was released from house arrest in South Africa specifically to fly to Khartoum and sign the latest peace deal, it is unclear what will happen to him next if he fails to sign the agreement. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The South Sudan government says it is disappointed with the way Kenyan authorities are handling the issue of South Sudanese who may be living illegally in Kenya. Kenyan authorities have arrested more than 200 South Sudanese in major cities and towns across the country this week. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
The Ministries of Information and Interior held a joint news conference in Juba this morning to express their anger about the arrest of South Sudanese living in Kenya. Interior Minister Michael Chengjek says Kenyan police went overboard by arresting mostly vulnerable people.
Kenyan's police have been moving from door to door, cracking down our citizens, arresting some of them, especially minors, and also expecting mothers, and the people with medical conditions. We as members of the, as one of the members of the East African community, we don't expect that treatment from our brothers Kenyans. If they wanted to do inspections or to review, it should be in conformity with the laws and international norms.
Hundreds of South Sudanese men, women and children have been taken into custody after Kenyan police conducted door-to-door searches in Nairobi and other cities across the country. The operation has continued for the past 4 days. Several reports in the Kenyan media quote the country's interior ministry officials as saying the operation was intended to deal with foreigners, including South Sudanese living and working in Kenya without proper immigration documentation. Chengjek says many South Sudanese living in Nakuru, Bugoma, Nyeri and Nairobi were greatly affected by the crackdown, but he says South Sudanese people will not lash out at Kenyans.
We want also to assure our Kenyan brothers who are here in the Republic of South Sudan that despite all this, they should not be panicking. They have to continue with their normal duties, and they have to see South Sudan as their second home. And not only Kenyan, even the other nationalities who are in our country, residing in this country.
Deputy Information Minister Lily Albino Akol told reporters in today's news conference that the South Sudan government is working with Kenyan authorities to resolve the issue amicably.
We want to assure all our citizens that all the efforts are now underway to address all the unfortunate events. The government is fully informed about what's going on in Kenya. And the government is also engaging through our Ministry of Foreign Affairs here and through our embassy in Kenya. The government is engaging the Kenyan authorities
to address this issue.
Thousands of South Sudanese study in Kenya. Others live as refugees in Kenya. Kenyan authorities say most of the people arrested did not renew their documents for a period of more than 2 months. Officials from South Sudan's Foreign Affairs Ministry and the South Sudanese Embassy in Kenya admit that some of the people arrested could be living in Kenya illegally. Mawien Makol, a spokesperson at South Sudan's Foreign Affairs Ministry, says Juba is doing everything it can to help affected South Sudanese acquire legal documents.
It has to be handled by the citizens themselves, because you cannot stay in this foreign land without being there legally. So those with the problem with the money, they have to consult now our embassy, so that some of them are helped. Those who cannot get help also will be tried to be dealt with in terms of working with UN.
Makol says many of the South Sudanese who were arrested have since been released. He says he hopes that those still in detention will also be released. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, supporters of former Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba are demanding he be allowed on the ballot for the December 23rd presidential election. Officials disqualified Bemba because of his past conviction by the International Criminal Court, which was later overturned. Some analysts predict trouble ahead if his supporters perceive him to be targeted by the country's political system. Mohamed Youssef reports.
The main opposition party, the Movement of the Liberation of the Congo, led by Jean-Pierre Bemba, is fighting to keep its candidate in the presidential race. Congo's Electoral Commission disqualified Bemba because of his 2016 conviction by the International Criminal Court. The court said Bemba, a former Congolese vice president, was responsible for war crimes committed by his militia in the Central African Republic. But in June, the court overturned the conviction and released Bemba from prison. His party argues that the ICC case is now over and that Bemba should be allowed on the ballot. Political commentator Delphine Kapaya says the way the court handles the case will determine the reaction of Bemba's supporters. There can be a problem because he enjoys a lot of support. If he is disqualified and it is seen he has been barred in accordance with the law, then they will be calm. But if it is seen that he is disqualified because of politics, then his party and his supporters will not accept that. Then that will be the beginning of troubles. Congo's highest court is expected to issue a ruling on Bemba's candidacy on September 19th. Researcher and political analyst Ntayoma Rukumbuzi says the court's decision will impact the next president, whoever is elected.
The Constitution Court may still overrule the Electoral Commission decision. But in case he doesn't run, the Constitution Court consider him as not qualified, I think it affects the legitimacy at some point.
For decades, DRC politics has been characterized by violence, coups and rights abuses committed by those in power. Human Rights Watch has accused the government of restricting the movement of opposition leaders and supporters. The MLC's Secretary General, Eva Baziaba, says her party is not ready for violence with its political opponents.
We don't want the violence because if we use the way of the violence, they will say that, you see, Mr. Bemba was in the jail, now he's free, he came again in Congo with violence. We say that we have to wait for the last decision of the court. And we hope that everything will be fine, because we need the free fair election.
After many months of tension, President Joseph Kabila recently agreed to step down after 17 years in power. Kabila defeated Bemba in the 2006 election. He has now thrown his support behind close ally Emmanuel Ramazani Shadari. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese hate speech is front and center in a new film. Find out more when we return.
do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can African countries develop to export more manufacturing goods rather than raw materials?
African countries should open many companies, industries, markets, new markets that will specialize in manufacturing. So as they manufacture, they will have to export more.
African countries should put up more industries and encourage people to go into agro-processing.
And also needs people to be trained on how to manufacture the things ready so that they can be transported.
I will have to say that we need to build our own machines. A product like cocoa, for example, if we had the machineries to manufacture chocolates, I'm sure we will not be exporting it outside.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The UN Refugee Agency reports 4 million refugee children are missing out on an education, a situation that bodes ill for their future and for the well-being of the communities in which they live. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the UNHCR has launched a new report entitled Turn the Tide, Refugee Education in Crisis.
The UN Refugee Agency reports enrollment of refugee children in school is not keeping pace with the growing refugee population, which has reached unprecedented levels. Globally, the UNHCR cares for nearly 20 million refugees, and more than one half are children. This means the number of refugee children needing to go to school also has risen, but this is not happening. UNHCR Senior Education Advisor Ita Shee says 61% of refugee children are attending primary school, dropping dramatically to 23% for secondary school. This, she underscores, is compared with 84% of children globally.
So if we put those figures together, we know that a refugee child is 5 times more likely than any other child not to be in school. This gets much worse as we get up to higher education level, and we have again seen that the percentage of 1% of refugees going to university has not increased in the past year, despite all of the efforts.
The report notes 92% of all refugees are hosted in developing countries. It says this poses problems because these poor countries have little money to provide quality education for their own children, let alone for refugee children. The UNHCR is urging host countries to enroll refugee children in their national school systems. It says putting these two groups together will result in a better educational result rather than keeping them in separate parallel systems. The agency is calling on the international community to invest in refugee children's education. At the same time, it urges donors to provide sustained financial support to improve the school systems in the developing host countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And despite the odds against girls receiving a good education in many communities in South Sudan, a South Sudanese girl emerged as the second best student in last year's national secondary school examinations. The 19-year-old says she was able to beat out all but one boy in nationwide examinations because she studied hard and avoided advances from boys and men. Manyang David Mayar has the story for VOA from Juba.
Nineteen-year-old Rebecca Bull sits comfortably on a blue chair, joyfully singing her favorite gospel song as she washes dishes at her paternal uncle's home in the Juba suburb of Nimratalata. Abul had the second-highest test score in secondary school examination results recently released by the National Ministry of General Education. When the results were released, Abul says her friends called to break the news and congratulate her. Abul had the second highest score out of 13,660 students who set for the South Sudan Secondary School National Examination. One boy scored higher than Abul with 93.4% of the total marks possible. Abul received 92.9%. She says she always stayed focused on her studies.
I always believe myself that I will make it. I just read well. Okay, I don't normally read too much, but what I read, it stayed in my head. Let me say that at school we don't sleep too much. We could wake up like around 4, we go to class and it's cold there. When you read, you understand things, they stay in your mind. So nothing can stop you from passing.
Abul spent 4 years studying the sciences, doing calculations in physics, chemistry and mathematics at Juba Academy, a newly established private secondary school on the outskirts of Juba. Many people in South Sudan think science is just for boys. Abul says that's just a mist.
It is the same God that created boys and girls, and it is the same God that gives the same brain. So people having that feeling that girls do not do well, when they are given the same treatment in school, even at home, and they encourage them that you can do better, I know they are in all girls, they will do better and they will win boys.
Abul says many parents in South Sudan force their daughters to do housework, which gives them less time to study. She says, as a student, some of the obstacles she faced included time spent cooking and cleaning for her family.
In South Sudan, people, in girls, they believe that if you want to be a good wife in future, you have to know how to cook those things. So when I'm at home, I have to leave the books. Even when I'm at home, I just not that interest of reading, so I have to cook.
Abul is one of 20 children born to a polygamous family of Chief Akut Dengagwer. They live in a village in northern Bahral Ghazal state. Abul is one of only 2 girls in the family allowed to go to school. Her stepsister, Maria Abul, emerged as the 7th highest scoring student countrywide. Grand Dengagwer is Abul's paternal uncle.
I used to give the support for the girls more than boys. So when I heard that they did it very well, I was very happy. Not me even. The people from northern Bahar Ghazal were calling me. Since 1996, no one from northern Bahar Ghazal in the top 10 in the school.
Among the Dinga community, many young girls like Abul are taken out of school and forced to marry at a young age, sometimes even to men old enough to be their grandfathers. Deng says he believes girls should be given equal opportunities as boys.
To me, the education is more than be married. And even recently, somebody was telling me that now your girls, they are being going to married now because they did very well. I told them that those girls are scientists. I don't want them to be married. They finish the school first, then the marriage will come.
Abul's outstanding test performance was also a result of support from the teachers at Juba Academy. Ojog Stephen is the director of studies at Juba Academy and one of Abul's teachers.
She has always been among the top 5 students, and she has been doing so well generally in all the subjects. So where she had issues like mathematics, we had to pay close attention, personal attention to her based on her weaknesses, and she finally made it in national examination.
Ojok says the major obstacle to girls' education is home chores. Juba Academy Secondary School claims 7 positions out of the top 10 best candidates countrywide. Abul says she wants to study medicine at the university so that she can help the South Sudanese people fight diseases. But until this time, it is still not clear if Abul will be given a government scholarship abroad. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
Finally, the makers of a new short film are hoping to bring the conversation about hate speech to the big screen. One of the film's writers and creators tells Ayan Bior that he wanted to offer a new avenue for South Sudanese to explore the subject in a relatable and easy way.
Yeah, I don't work with politicians because they are bad news.
That's a clip from Defy Hate, a short film about the consequences of hate speech used online. The lead character explains to his friend why he'd rather go at it alone than work with politicians. In the movie, a politician creates a Facebook page to advance his views. Before long, the page becomes a platform for hate speech and rumors. The plot may not be real, but one of its writers, Ijili Hakim Ijili, says the fear that comes with what hate speech can do and the rumors being spread on social media are real.
We've been trying to do all these mobilizations because after the war, social media in South Sudan turned bad. So I thought of, okay, how can we come up with some material that can be used as an educational toolkit? We're going to be doing the campaign of Defy Hate now, as well as we can use that material to like raise all this awareness about how it happens online and how it affects people offline, how it actually comes from offline to online and goes back again, backfire back again to people offline.
The movie shares the title of a popular pro-peace campaign in South Sudan called Defy Hate Now, which uses different forms of art and expression to tamp down violence and hate speech. He admits it is an ambitious goal, but a necessary one.
After the independence of South Sudan in 2011, there was nothing other than peace on social media. Right after 2013, just 2 days after that, things totally change on social media. And now people say South Sudanese are like all these tribal things in South Sudan. Actually, it came after 2013. It was there. People were trying to bury it. But after 2013, it just, poof, no, I'm not going to be buried.
Defy Hate was created by SKP South Sudan and Bilpam Noy Studios, the same production team that made Zawaja Gali, a film which was recognized at the Silicon Valley Film Festival in California last year. The film is not yet available online. Creators plan to premiere it at the upcoming Juba Film Festival.
It was brilliant, hard work to try to like squeeze, filter, try to bring all these elements of the story or actually of the campaign together into that script.
Hakim hopes the film will reach a new audience that is sometimes overlooked. As for the art of filmmaking, the young movie writer hopes he is chartering a path for other aspiring filmmakers in South Sudan.
It was brilliant, hard work to try to like squeeze, filter, try to bring all these elements of the story or actually of the campaign together into that script.
You can look for Defy Hate at the Juba Film Festival, expected to take place in December. Ayan Dengbior, VOA News, with reporting in Juba.
That is our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Bandenko by Dudu Kopa.
Maître Olivier Mindenge, Maître Yondi Darcel, David Cheba de la rébellion lundi.
We've been listening to Dudu Kopa with the song Bandenko. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.
I'm